Hey there, just a heads up, this podcast is for grown-ups only. We're talking about adult stuff, think spicy language, mature themes, and topics your grandma might raise an eyebrow at. So if you're under 18, come back when you're older. For everyone else, enjoy the ride.
Welcome to Hacking Love, deepening commitment through open relationships. I'm Aiden.
And I'm Anna. We created this podcast to explore the transformative power of ethical non-monogamy and how it can deepen connections in modern relationships.
We've been through it all, divorce, heartbreak, and figuring out what real commitment looks like. Now we're here to share our journey and the lessons we've learned along the way.
Whether you're experienced in open relationships or just curious, we want this to be a space where we can dive into real conversation about everything from swinging to polyamory.
We'll talk candidly about jealousy, desire, emotional growth, and radical honesty. Basically, everything that comes up when you step outside the conventional rules of love.
And if you're enjoying the show, we'd love it if you could take a moment to leave us a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to. It really helps us reach more people.
Absolutely. And we'd also love to hear from you. Our contact info is in the show notes, so feel free to reach out with your thoughts and questions. We'll definitely get back to you.
So let's dive in. It's time to hack love and discover what truly authentic connections look like. Welcome back.
Welcome back, guys.
So we weren't going to record tonight, but I've been listening to this book called The Jealousy Workbook by Kathy Labriola, which we've heard several other podcasts talk about as being really critical in their relationships and learning about themselves and how to do better in their open relationships and work through issues. And I haven't gotten very far in it, but I took notes on one of the first chapters, which is basically figuring out if an open relationship is even right for you. And so she talks about trying to figure out where on the spectrum you are between total monogamy and, say, like polyamory. And then there are several questions that she has you answer to see where you are on that spectrum. And I thought it was really interesting. I was answering them in my head, but I really wanted Aiden to answer them too. And I thought, okay, this would be really fun to do on a podcast, just live.
So you want to know where on the spectrum I am?
Yes, exactly.
I'm on some spectrum, I'm sure.
I have my theory about where you land versus where I land, but mm-hmm. I could be completely wrong, actually.
Okay. I'm game.
Or we could be the same.
So I haven't seen this at all, so this is going to be a surprise.
Exactly.
Recording for y'all.
So the first thing she has you do is think about what relationship models you grew up with and which relationships do you remember that seemed happy and healthy and ones that you would want to emulate, right? So they have you list healthy monogamous relationships and then healthy open relationships that you may have found or seen. And she points out that, look, you may have admired some relationships that may have been open and you didn't know it, because a lot of people are not open about being open.
Probably a very small number, though.
That's true. Or there could have been cheating or other forms.
Or don't ask, don't tell.
There could have been other forms of non-monogamy going on, but you never know. But the important thing is, what was it about these relationships that appealed to you? And so I can answer that. I don't have a lot of relationships that I admire, I have to say. I have an aunt and uncle whose relationship I really admired. And I think it came down to his respect for her. And he was always in a high profile, more high paying job. And she always worked, but for lower pay. But there was always this equality between them and mutual respect that I really admired. They're both really smart, very respectful people. And he brings her coffee every morning in bed to this day. And there's just this devotion that they have and mutual respect that I really admire. One of the things that I've struggled with as an adult, especially in my marriage, was how do I assert myself and get respect even though I'm the stay-at-home parent or I'm working but I don't make as much money? Do I get to choose the vacations if I'm not paying for them technically? And I see other relationships where that works and there is mutual respect, but then that was not my experience in my marriage.
But it was really around money with your ex.
It really was. Yeah. And just money and power.
I make the money, I make the decisions. There wasn't the respect between you two.
No.
The courtesy, the consideration.
Right. And that hurt. And so big quality where you're feeling appreciated for who you are and for what you do. But I also had a really positive relationship of my own in high school and through college and part of grad school that was more of a don't ask, don't tell, because we had a lot of distance and long distance periods where we didn't see each other. But it was a really good relationship. Other than that, I think we just didn't really have the vocabulary to talk about being in an open relationship back then. It was a long time ago. And
did it cross your mind ever in terms of, we did the don't ask, don't tell, which is consensual non-monogamy?
Sort of.
You both knew eventually that you were with other people, but you just didn't really talk about it much until you talked about it and you made light of it, both of you.
Exactly. Yeah. We just glazed over it.
And it didn't interfere.
No, but eventually it did, because it was more lopsided on my end. And I think that's where, again, lack of communication is where you run into trouble. Mm-hmm. Even if you think it's going to be okay with don't ask, don't tell, it eventually caves in on itself, because you're making assumption and there's secrets and you're assuming you can't tell somebody this because it's going to hurt their feelings, because it probably will, because mm-hmm. you don't have any agreements around it. You're just flying blind, trying to get your needs met during a 3-month summer break.
Any others that you've seen? That's not a lot. Your own and your aunt and uncle.
The ones I've seen among our friends that I really admire are the open relationships, yeah, because 100%. Of the communication. And the ones that I think are monogamous or mostly monogamous, but they might not be. There's a couple in our sort of vanilla circle that I'm like,
yeah,
they seem to have really good communication and really great mutual respect. And
I would completely mistake them for lifestyle.
Yes.
Now that I'm in it and know it, because I see them and I'm like, you guys are doing something different.
Something.
And it's not just hanging out more together.
They're just, so
they're
it's just really
playful,
interesting.
And they're open-minded and things like that. So, yeah,
they're still flirtatious people. With each other. Yeah. And
that's typically what we see in the lifestyle.
Yeah. So we've always wondered about, there's two couples that I'm thinking of in that category. But yeah, it's crazy that it's not a lot, honestly. It really hasn't been until we got into the lifestyle that I've met couple after couple that I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah, they're totally happy.
I'd be like them. I'd be like them too. They seem, they also seem happy over there. What about you?
I don't know if my parents' marriage was happy. They stayed together and then they divorced when I was in high school. Eventually unhappy. I think I asked my dad at one point, how long was it before you, towards the end of marriage, did you know that it wasn't going to work out? And he said about 5 years. He said they were generally happy the first 10, 15 years.
Wow.
But then she worked a lot and she would fly out of town and leave him with the kids. And then he was like, and he wanted to do his own thing, and definitely affected their parenting, I'll tell you that.
Yeah.
As a latchkey Gen X kid. But I wouldn't say super happy. I think they were fine with each other.
Friends, parents?
Yeah, I saw some friends' parents. Yeah. On my street, there was a friend of mine whose parents seemed very happy with each other and very, it's that consideration. You feel it with a couple. You feel they take care of each other, that they back each other up, and they co-parent. And even if the roles are traditional, you can still have that communication and that consideration and the love for the other person, for sure. This was the 80s, and I'm trying to remember anybody that just really stood out, but there really aren't many. My aunt and uncle, too, long time married. I don't know if they were happy or not. So hard to know. Yeah, is that part of the... That's part of the question then, huh? Just think of those relationships that were really solid.
Yeah.
And what did you like about them? And I think we can look at that now and say the people that we know are very solid. We love their communication, their interaction, their consideration for each other. They flirt with each other, like you said. They seem very close and fun, but they're not codependent or maybe more interdependent. They seem more like a team.
Yeah.
So I think those are the ones I would look at.
Definitely. The ones who aren't talking about each other behind their back. They say nice things about each other that you can't really get between them.
I think all of us know couples where you're just like, wow, you can just really feel the connection with them, the respect and all those things. Yeah,
exactly. So I thought that was interesting because you would think with how we idolize romantic relationships, but it can be hard to find ones that you would really want to emulate. That's why we're so obsessed with this. Like, I really want to do this right.
Yeah.
I'm obsessed with it. So then the next step is clarifying your own relationship orientation. So what is your experience in monogamous romantic relationships? So this is question number one, and I'll ask you and then I can answer. You want to do it that way?
Sure.
Okay. Now, did you feel safe and secure due to sexual exclusivity in your past monogamous relationships?
That's a loaded question, because the sexual exclusivity is what makes you feel not secure, because you have all these expectations. And then if there's anything that doesn't follow that path, it could upset you and make you insecure. As you ask that question, I'm thinking, like, it's almost like you're, you know, keeping all the marbles together, right? And a marble might get away and you're just anxious. Whereas if you're not exclusive, and I'm just thinking of the lifestyle aspect of this, I don't have to worry about the marbles. Marbles going anywhere. I know they're going to be my marbles. And they're going to run all over the place.
Still my marbles. Yeah.
They might run all over the place.
They're just like running amok. People.
Yeah, running amok. And yeah, I think I know where that question's headed, which is, did that exclusivity help you feel more secure? And my answer is probably not, but I didn't know anything else.
Completely agree with that. I felt less secure in my monogamous relationships, or supposedly monogamous relationships, because I knew that I was always finding other people attractive, and I just assumed they were too, and weren't telling me, because that was our agreement, because that is the agreement in monogamy. Mm-hmm. Don't tell.
For many people, yeah.
For a lot of people. And yeah, I didn't feel more secure, ironically. That's so mm-hmm. interesting. Did you experience deeper intimacy when you were in a monogamous relationship?
No.
No, I did not.
Compared
either.
To now, no.
No. I did in my high school relationship, but I think we would have been monogamous if we had been physically in the same location longer. But I've never had more intimacy than I have now with you. Did you feel more comfortable in the monogamous relationship? No.
For other reasons, but not the exclusivity reason, but for many reasons, I didn't feel comfortable.
Yeah.
The times that I've been quasi-jealous with past girlfriends.
Yeah.
This is outside my marriage. I wasn't ever really jealous of my marriage. I was never worried about that. But in past relationships, yeah, there's always the threat that you're young and people coming around, and that can make you uncomfortable, especially if you go through periods of being really close. I mean, you might have a period where you're not.
Right.
And you get bored with each other, or someone strays, or you get distance between you, or whatever that is. So, no.
Were you able to be very honest with your partner about your feelings and needs in your monogamous relationship?
Other than my marriage, my ex-marriage?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, I agree. I just wasn't in my marriage. But yes, in my previous relationships, I think I...
Does it take marriage to ruin that?
I don't know what it is. Maybe a monogamous marriage, or just this... Maybe we just picked the wrong people. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, that's
so you guys, this could be very specific to us. But you guys can ask each other these questions along with us and see where you fall. I think it was very situational for me, who I was with. So I was definitely able to express myself very authentically with my high school and college boyfriend, except for my interest in other people. And he didn't really express his interest in other people to me. And then other relationships that I had in between, some I was able to be more honest than others, but they were more the traditional sort of serial monogamy, 2-year monogamous relationships happening in the middle of grad school, that kind of thing. That I was probably a fraction of myself that I am with you. So no, but maybe a lot of that has to do with my age and maturity. I mean, I certainly wasn't thinking about open relationships at that time. I just didn't even know that was a possibility.
Yeah,
but I will say that I have always been attracted to other people. The only time that I was not ever attracted to other people in my life was when I was on the pill for 15 years, which mm-hmm. took my testosterone to zero and also made me depressed. So I was on an SSRI and the birth control pill. So I had no libido whatsoever. So that was the only thing. I basically was neutered. But as soon as I came off the pill and my own hormones came back, I was back.
Yeah, we should do an episode just on birth control at some point.
We really should.
We've done a health-related episode before, but the birth control pill... You really need to examine what it's doing to your body, what it's doing to your mind over the years. Many people listening to this are on it. Yeah. And we'll recommend places to go to research that, because it does affect who you choose, who chooses you.
Yeah.
If you're dating on the pill, you may choose the wrong person and marry them like you did.
Yeah.
And it changes just your whole body makeup, right? In terms of your hormones, your pheromones.
Your health, your nutrients, yeah. Your thyroid function, your mental health.
Libido.
Everything. And we need birth control, but there are other options. I'm not anti-birth control pill. I'm pro women having information about all the options. Okay, the next question is, did you feel sexually satisfied in your monogamous relationship?
To a point, yes.
Yeah, same.
We're talking about our marriages.
Not in my marriage. Yeah. Not in my marriage. In my previous serial monogamy, because I had 10, 12-year relationship. And then I had a few 2 or 3 year relationships, and then I got married. So in those, I was very satisfied, but I also noticed other people and wanted other people too.
I always have been, pretty much. If it didn't work sexually, I probably wouldn't date him very long. It's just one of those things that just has to match for me.
Yeah. I think for me, during the time, I was doing a lot of traveling and working in different countries. So there was a lot of long distance going on. And so I would be monogamous as long as we were both in the same town. And then I usually had something going on in the summer.
Such a slut.
Because 3 months is a long time. I know. I don't know. This is interesting.
Hence, you're in the lifestyle now.
Hence, here I am. I know.
It's the only way it could have kept you.
But we don't ever leave each other for any amount of time. Now you're never going to want to leave town.
That's the point. Yeah, really.
You're like, I'm canceling all my trips.
Go for it. Whatever.
I know. let's see. So you said, yes, you felt sexually satisfied.
In my marriage, I was. That's the one thing we did have, was a pretty good sexual relationship. Although,
and yet,
our dynamic was, she would never initiate, ever. It had to be me reading her mind and hoping I got the right moment and making the right moves that wouldn't be rejected somehow.
Yeah.
But once we got in bed, it was great. Pretty vanilla, much more vanilla compared to us. But I was pretty satisfied. I just didn't know there was anything else out there, and I was married to her, and that was that.
But you craved something more at the end.
Oh, definitely at the end. Yeah. At the end, I was like eyes wide open. But the first 10, 15 years was pretty good.
You guys did have a good sex life.
Yeah.
That's helpful.
The only thing that kept us together, and kept us together too long. And the kids, that kept us together for a long time.
And that's the best part.
Those two things. Just two things.
Those are two really big things, honestly.
Those are big things, yes.
And that
can make it go much longer than maybe it should.
That probably made it even harder for you to leave, for sure. Do you believe your partner was honest with you about their feelings and needs?
Which partner?
In any monogamous relationship that you've had in the past, do you believe your partner or partners in those relationships were being honest with you about their feelings and needs?
In my marriage, that's all I heard was her needs.
Oh, yeah. So, you were definitely hearing
that. Yeah, I was hearing needs all the time. That was a major problem for us. But in my other relationships, I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think they were totally telling me everything they needed. And I wasn't telling them either.
Yeah. I think I would probably have to say the same thing about my previous relationships. In my marriage, no, we did not have good communication. He criticized me a lot in my marriage. I would have loved actually to hear more about his legitimate needs and emotions, but I really wasn't hearing that. It was
He never went there with you, right?
No, we didn't really go deep. I think that would have been really helpful though. Okay. Did you find yourself more focused on work and other life activities when you were in a monogamous relationship?
My marriage, 100%.
Yes.
Especially the second half of it, where I was just wanting to get away.
Yeah.
I was building my career, for sure. And I had a young family and was building that. But yeah, work was everything. Mm-hmm. I would go on trips for 4 days here and there. And yeah, and then I'd go out again. For a while, I was consulting, so I was out all the time. So it definitely took over a good portion of my 30s.
Yeah, and I just completely focused on the kids and health coaching and volunteering at school.
My other relationships, no. I don't think I ever distracted myself with work or any other hobbies or anything.
I did.
Yeah.
I was always burying myself in my work.
Yeah.
For sure.
You've always done that.
I have. Yeah. Did you feel that you and your partner were a good team and were more effective and creative through the synergy of this relationship than either of you had been on your own?
I always felt like I was more creative.
I always felt like I was better on my own.
Yeah.
And this time I feel like I'm better with you.
Yeah, 100%.
And did you enjoy spending most, if not all, of your free time with your partner during this relationship, the monogamous relationship?
Marriage, 100% no.
No. Absolutely not. I would hide from him. It was so unpleasant. Who wants to be around someone who's just criticizing you all the time? But even with my other relationships, even with my really good relationship, I liked my time to myself for sure.
And you were like that when we started out too.
Definitely.
Like, this is a very important. I like time to myself. And then I don't see that now much. You still have it.
I do.
But it's almost like when we're together, it's like being alone together.
It's exactly what it is. I feel safe with you. I think the time alone is a self-protective mechanism that I have developed from growing up in the family I grew up in, being in the marriage I grew up in, that I make this assumption that if I'm hanging out with anybody else but myself, there's going to be a certain degree of masking that's going to have to go on. And that is exhausting, or people pleasing that's going on. Mm-hmm. And so the only time that I can relax and recharge is when I'm just perfectly alone. I don't have to look like anything. I don't have to be hot or cute or sweet or perfect or not bloated or gassy, like whatever it is. And so I just have always been a little self-protective on that, but you just accept me exactly how I am, whatever package I'm coming in. And so I like being around you all the time. It's great. And it feels really good. And it makes me feel super loved. And I love you.
Same for me.
It's so awesome. But I'm trying to work on that avoidant part of my personality and where that comes from, which I think is just self-protective. And I love being able to lean in to our relationship and just be with us, and it feels really good.
Yeah, my avoidant personality in my relationships was avoiding. Literally, I'm going on the strip, or I'm going out down the street, or I'm going to go to the store. Even when it got really bad, I was avoiding all the time.
Yeah,
because I just couldn't stand the stasis of our relationship at the time. But yeah, that avoidant behavior is self-protective.
That's dangerous if we both have avoidant tendencies. That's what I did in my marriage. I would hide in the bathroom. Like,
I don't see us avoiding each other too much.
We're not. We live next door. You're right.
Maybe we are, because we're not living together.
Maybe that's just our way of healing. We're taking our time. And this is a really great way to ease into it.
Yeah. That makes sense.
But it's very healing. Mm-hmm. And I think we're doing great, babe. I really do. And let's see. What does it say? Were you okay spending very little time alone or with your other friends when you were in a monogamous relationship? No, I was not okay with that. I really missed my time alone. It's hard to say because it was a bad relationship that I was in my marriage.
Yeah, I think the questions are with two different
eras
in our lives. One's married and one's dating. The dating ones were fine across the board. The marriage one was not for both of us. Yeah, so I have two answers for every question based on who it is I was dating at the time. But generally before marriage, in the longer relationships I had, pretty much generally good across the board.
Yeah.
We'd have fights or whatever, just standard stuff. I don't remember being like we are now with anyone ever.
Yeah.
Just because of everything being open and communication and just the things we've talked about. But I don't remember it being particularly bad.
Yeah, same. Anytime. Okay, so for the questions we just did, you get 10 points for each yes, which I don't know if we really had.
We get points?
Many yeses.
All right.
But if you have more than 40 points, you tend to be more monogamous. So we would have said yes for 4 of them, and I don't think we really did.
Yeah, we were a lot of no's.
We were a lot of no's. Yeah, so that's interesting. Okay, so then the questions that veer toward more open relationships are these. Did you struggle with romantic sexual desires toward other people while in a monogamous relationship? Yes, I always have.
Yes, same.
Except for now, which is so funny. It takes effort.
Yeah, it really does for both of us. We talk about this a lot. I don't need any of the lifestyle stuff. We've told each other many times, you could say, let's drop it now, and I drop it.
Same.
Just because it's just not a need, which makes it that much better. Because it's not something that we have to have, it's something we can have. And the can having of it makes the have to have of it go away.
It does.
It's really ironic.
Am I just being controlled by reverse psychology, essentially? Because I do have that piece of me, don't tell me what to do. Mm-hmm. So as soon as I'm free, I'm so picky, which is great. But I have to say, I do love that I can look forward the rest of my life to like maybe once a year, once every 2 years, some kind of fun romp that'll be a story.
Yeah.
Same. And that you can too. I literally cannot imagine someone like you with the personality that you have, the openness, the skills in bed that you have, to have that just go put in a museum somewhere for the rest of your life just seems cruel. Like, how could I love you and be your best friend and biggest cheerleader and be like, yeah, that's just for me now. Just a wonderful person. So what about you? Did you struggle with romantic sexual desires toward other people when you're in monogamous relationships?
Yeah, I was young for sure.
Yeah.
I was in a college relationship with a girl for 3 years, and I think I cheated on her a couple times, just kissing and stuff. And you're young, you're dumb, you're in your 20s. But during my marriage, when it was bad, for sure, I was like, really, what would it be like? And is my life over now? I think that's what I was going to comment on a minute ago, as you talked about for the rest of your life. not being able to see anybody else. And I think part of the real excitement about our relationship in the lifestyle is that I can do it if I want. I'm marrying you, mm-hmm. and I'm not being told I can never be with anybody again. Mm-hmm. Those have always been mutually exclusive, and now they're not. Mm-hmm. And that's just, there's a freedom to that. It's not like I want to go out and do it and fuck all the time. Maybe not, but it would be good either way. But it's just the idea of this is going to be a lifetime with you.
Yeah.
And if somebody comes along that I'm really into, I can see where it goes. And that's freedom. And that takes my looking down the road at whatever's going to happen later and saying, nope, that's off the table forever. And a piece of me just goes away with that. And so I just think that having that option does make you feel more secure in a way.
So
I feel more secure in a marriage having that option. That sounds just so weird, but it's true.
I understand it. I feel the exact same way. Because it feels like
that's leaving anyone.
I said this, I think, way back in probably episode one, is that I feel more chosen every single day by you in an open relationship than I would in a monogamous or mm-hmm. forced monogamous mm-hmm. or non-conscious monogamous relationship.
Yeah, I choose you every day.
Because you do have the choice and you can be with me or not. And mm-hmm. it feels great. I love it.
Yeah.
And I love that we're both independent humans. Did you feel bored with your sexual relationship when you were in a monogamous relationship?
I wouldn't say bored. I would just say maybe it wasn't enough, but we weren't connecting enough. Hmm. So to the 22-year marriage, we probably went down to the once a week, once every couple of weeks kind of thing. If we weren't getting along, maybe 3 weeks. I wasn't bored with the sex itself. I was bored with the person.
Yeah.
You know,
no, so. I get it.
Yeah, so that's probably my answer.
Yeah, my sex life was great with my high school boyfriend. It got better and better. Like, it never got worse. I wasn't bored with him. Again, it was just distance that added more people to the mix every once in a while. And same with other boyfriends after him. And then my marriage, when I was on the pill and on the SSRI, didn't care because I had no sex drive.
Yep.
As soon as I came off the pill and off the SSRI and my hormones came back and I was definitely bored and perched up like a cat on the headboard, like about to lose my mind. Once a quarter was not doing it for me. So let's see. Did you want more romance and excitement in your monogamous relationship?
Excitement for sure. Mm. And romance too. But our romance was always on her terms in terms of what I should be doing, right? I like romance, genuine romance, but not when it's something I'm expected to do, like the Valentine's Day kind of thing. Of mm-hmm. course, I did that. But in that situation, I wasn't very romantic in my marriage, which is really weird to say.
Yeah, it's hard when you're not given the opportunity to let it just flow naturally from you.
And really, and I was like that with her a lot. And she was like that with me a lot when periodically.
Yeah.
But feeling like that all the time, though.
Yeah, I would say my high school relationship, he was super romantic and exciting and fun. And that was fantastic. I didn't have anything I wanted for in that regard for 10, 12 years. But my marriage, there wasn't a lot of romance or excitement. There just wasn't a lot of connection. Which
connection leads to romance.
Leads to romance for me.
Hard connection to have it without it.
Is where I get turned on. Our conversations like this, like we almost always have sex after we record because I'm so turned on by listening to you talk. I'm just like, say more things, Aiden. Say more deep thoughts from Aiden. Introspective men are it. Let's see. Did you long for more emotional intimacy than your partner could provide? Yes, in my marriage, I did long for that for sure. Did either you or your partner cheat or have sex with someone else during the relationship? I've talked about... In my high school, all the boyfriends and all the different things, I generally, if we didn't see each other for a month or longer, then yes, that was the case. But if I was with them in the same town and we were seeing each other on a regular basis, then I was fine being monogamous and I was very happy. But I had a limit on how long I could go. I don't know. That's just my honest answer. And in my marriage, when I came off the pill, that resulted in me getting separated because I wasn't having sex.
That's one of the reasons.
So many reasons. Yeah. But that was definitely one of them that was unsustainable for me. Let's see. Did you ever feel suffocated and try to create more distance, saying, I need more space, time alone, I feel too controlled, or I want more privacy? That is...
Those are the words out of my mouth for the last 5 years of my marriage.
Same.
Every day.
Same here.
Yeah.
I have said that in every relationship I've ever been in. And that actually really gave me pause and made me start to think about my avoidant, possibly attachment issues and needing to work on that and make sure. Because I think that was part of the reason we broke up, was that I was just...
Yeah.
I felt like I couldn't please you. I couldn't give you the time that I needed. So I was telling you to go get another girlfriend and making you feel like you weren't loved by me. And I was trying to push you away instead of pull you toward me.
Which is an avoidant behavior.
That is an avoidant behavior, and that's not healthy. This one really hit me. We were talking about the difference between bedroom houses and living room houses.
Mm-hmm.
And how, if you guys have not heard of this, if your house is a living room house, everybody feels comfortable being in the communal spaces because they feel safe to be themselves and say what they want to say, and they don't fear criticism or negative interactions. Whereas bedroom houses, where everybody hides in their bedrooms, everybody's being self-protective. And I grew up in more of a bedroom house. My house with my ex-husband was more of a bedroom house because we were trying to hide from him. So what I've been trying to do now is, with my two kids who are now older, is be around in the common spaces whenever I can be, so that when they do come to those common spaces too, that I can just be there, but be a calming presence and be chill. But this is how I'm trying to be less avoidant in all areas of my life. This is how the lifestyle can help you.
Yeah, you've been learning from this.
In a lot of other areas.
Yeah, I think I had a similar bedroom house growing up a little bit. And then in my marriage, I just wanted to be in the bedroom all the time and be away from her. And she would force the community stuff, which was good. She forced our dinners every night together, which was, of course, I wanted that with my kids. But as we got older and the kids got older, it became more of a, okay, we're done talking here so I can go to my room. That's what my kids would do.
Did they get criticized by her a lot?
That's part of her personality. We won't get into it too much, but her personality is to criticize and make things perfect because they aren't perfect and she needs to see them perfect.
Yeah.
And that weighs on a kid, and it's the little things. Wasn't always overt, but it was just the little daily judgments that came with her personality that her family has, all of them, very judgmental people. And so if you're around people who are judgy and criticizing you, it makes you uncomfortable and you want to find an out. And so I don't think they voluntarily did a lot of those things. I think they did because they didn't want to hear the criticism about not being together either. So that kind of makes sense.
Yeah. Let's see. Did you sometimes feel there was some important component missing from the monogamous relationship? Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Lots of important components missing in my marriage, for sure. Did this relationship end because you lost interest in your partner after a short time and wanted to pursue a new relationship with someone else? No, that is not why mine ended.
No, they're too long to boil it down to that.
Yeah, absolutely not. I think that one is trying to find out if you are one of the types of people who are attracted to non-monogamy because you're chasing NRE and you're afraid of commitment and deep connection. And that's definitely not.
No, we wanted connection.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we just couldn't get it.
40 or more points, you are more oriented toward an open relationship, which I think we are more oriented toward an open relationship. So it says, where do you fall? If you're higher on both of them, if you got over 40 points on both tests, which I don't think we got 40 points on the monogamous side, but if we had, or if you did, dear listeners out there, then you're more in the middle of the monogamous polyamorous spectrum. But in those cases, she says that you can be just as happy in a monogamous relationship as a fully polyamorous relationship or anywhere in between. It will just depend probably on the person, the circumstances, and maybe even your stage of life, which I totally get because we are obviously in a very different stage of life with older kids than we would have been. I don't know that I would have been as open to this when I had little kids in the house. And
a lot of people are, though.
And a lot of people are.
Most
it's really impressive.
Our have little kids, and they're just great parents. They have great families. They're very happy together, and they have their hobby.
And I think that can happen when you have a really good relationship because you're both supporting each other. So one person isn't just doing all of the domestic labor and feeling totally overwhelmed and unappreciated and unsexy. So yeah, well, I thought that was very interesting.
Yeah, very interesting.
Yes.
So the book is called?
The Jealousy Workbook by Kathy Labriola. And we have the full book coming tomorrow. I think this is a big issue for people. the jealousy issue. It's something that I'm constantly working on. I think it's so much bigger than jealousy too. What I'm finding is that every time I deal with my jealousy, it brings up all these other issues, like attachment, like, where's my ego in this? Am I being empathetic enough? Am I able to see this from somebody else's eyes? My partner's eyes, the eyes of the other couples we might be with. They're not just sex toys. They're human beings, right? And so all of that I'm interested in and becoming better in. We'll bring that to you and you can decide if you want to get the workbook yourself and see if it might be helpful. Did you always think of yourself as more open, or did you just start thinking about it later in life?
I've always felt like I was more open-minded than most.
Yeah.
I never really thought I was like especially kinky or debaucherous. Debaucherous maybe in some ways, but sexually, no. I wanted the connection. So I think that kind of kept me more focused on monogamy than maybe I would have been otherwise, is that I just really created the connection. I like coupledom. It's nice.
Yeah.
And if you're with someone like I found now that really you can make that match with, then it's everything I want.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why getting in this lifestyle and being as close as we are, I think because of the lifestyle in many ways, and then being in it, but not really obtaining all the things it gives you. I don't know if I'm saying this wrong.
We're in it, but we're a lot of it. We're in it in our own heads,
yeah.
As more than in actual experience.
I know if I went on a trip now, and I've got a business trip coming up, I know I could run across someone, and I still have that single guy mentality a little bit that mm-hmm. I could. Hey, that woman's really attractive, and the difference between now and then is now I can say, I wonder what that would be like. I wonder if I could flirt with her. I wonder if I could like really be more assertive than I ever would have been in a monogamous relationship. When I was monogamous in a marriage, I was like, oh, that girl's really hot. But, you know, underneath her, you're never going to be with that person. Even if you could, you're wearing a wedding ring and she's not going to be with you because you're already married. So it's just doesn't even cross your mind, really. It's just, oh, attractive woman over there.
Or now I can see it. Guilty.
And
it,
that's invigorating to know that as a man, this one's really attractive. And if the situation arose, I could do something with that. And that's just a freedom.
There was a beautiful woman that you saw out at a work thing in the last year. And I remember you texting me about it. And I was like, ask her to dinner.
Oh, yeah, that's right. And I was like, we're in the conference and she's like a lawyer or something. And I'm like, I'm not hitting on her at the conference.
I was like, why not?
I know. And I'm like, I never did that before. So. You were. And I did flirt with her a little bit. And she had to go.
But that's so great, though. Yeah,
that opportunity being there without feeling like shit, without feeling like I'm a cheater or that I'm doing something wrong, and being free to do that, just it's satisfying in some way. I can still be myself,
yes,
which is my flirty, communicative, funny, sexual self, without worrying about it. And that's a freedom. I'm not saying it's for everyone. I could see if I were with someone else who was very threatened, that would be a problem. Of course, I wouldn't tell her. Maybe I flirted with that girl and she never found out about it.
But we don't lose that part of ourselves that wants to feel appreciated that way.
Exactly. And you're supposed to lose that at the altar.
We don't lose it. And it's a gift to give to your partner to be able to feel that still.
Yeah, we don't lose it. We suppress it. That's what we've learned in our marriages and through life, is that I have these urges. I'm going to suppress them. And that's not authentic. And so that's just one of those observations you make. Wow, I'm thinking about it differently. I'm reacting differently. And it's more me.
Yeah.
So not that the lifestyle is necessarily me, but I think me being myself is an outcome of being in the lifestyle.
Yeah.
And I treasure that. I love that.
I think I'm probably less flirtatious now in public than I ever have been.
That's probably true.
God, that is so weird.
Why is that?
I don't know.
I know all of our friends are probably wondering why you don't put out more.
I don't. That is 100% true. A lot of it, when you're with lifestyle people, I don't want to give the wrong idea. So if it's someone I know, I'm not going to be sleeping
with. You'll give the wrong idea to people that aren't in the lifestyle.
We've said that before. It's almost easier to flirt in a vanilla context because they're not going to be expecting sex.
That's
from you.
True.
So I can flirt or be inappropriate and they would assume that's where it ends. You and I are engaged. That's just fun flirtation, whatever. Whereas if it's with the lifestyle group, it's like, you're saying there's a chance. So I like, I don't want to, I just, I feel so bad. On. I don't want to
Because you really could be leading them on in that situation.
Exactly.
It's like you're single and you're at a bar and you're talking
to
a guy.
That's exactly
right. We're single dating together.
Yes.
Singularly. And it does bring up a whole host of things you've never experienced in your life. What can we say about people out there who are, if they're listening to this, they're in their monogamous relationship and they're branching out, or they're thinking about it, or maybe their partner's thinking about it, and they're trying to learn more?
Yeah.
What would you tell them in the context of the questions, like when they're trying to make their decision? Let's say a woman's listening to this because their partner said, hey, I'm really interested in this. What do you think? And they've been talking about it, and she's just trying to learn as much as she can.
Yeah.
And I think these questions in this workbook you put forth are really helpful in trying to break down what it is that you understand about relationships, what you've just assumed, and maybe what it could be, monogamous or not. And I think it always boils down to connection, communication.
Because you can have a consciously monogamous relationship. In fact, on Evolving Love, which is a great podcast we highly recommend, they have an excellent interview with a monogamous couple that are consciously monogamous. They have considered all the options and this is what feels right to them, but they have all of the communication and honesty that comes in an open relationship. They just choose and prefer to only have sexual romantic relationship with each other.
That was a really interesting episode because we listened to it and we had thoughts on it.
Yeah, we did.
And at first we thought, wow, they're just like us. We're as monogamous as they are almost. Not just because we don't play that much, but mainly because we're so close. We have that connection. We are able to talk about everything and really consider it. And we're very thoughtful about everything. And that aligned a lot with how we are.
Yeah.
But then as the host really got into why is it that you know about non-monogamy, you've learned about it, you've listened to our podcast and you've been on all these shows, and what is it that keeps you from doing it? And she didn't really have a good answer for that. I think there was some fear in her still, even though they were so conscious and so open and had done all the research. I think there was still a fear in her of him falling out of love with her or connecting. She said, he really connects with people and I don't want to see him really connect with someone.
Oh.
So they're consciously monogamous, but there's still fear there, which is fine. It works for them.
They're very protective of what they have.
Yes, and that's important.
And that, but it
assumes it would break them up.
It assumes it would break them up, whereas I don't assume that anymore. I have what I think are rational fears about you sometimes when my jealousy comes up, but I know deep down that's just my amygdala talking.
And I think that's where you might be ahead of her because you know that.
Yeah.
And you've also experienced it and she hasn't experienced
it. And I have experienced it multiple times where I'm like, there he is.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Doing it with other women, and now here he is with me,
and I come back.
We're better than ever.
Yeah,
and I think,
and even in your good high school long term relationship, you had that.
Like, we did.
Yeah, you, and maybe that's what kind of prepped you for this. Is that he came back?
Yeah,
you know, he went away for 3 months. He came back.
Yeah,
you guys had dated other people. You're still together, and maybe that desensitized you a little bit at the time.
It may have.
Mm-hmm.
I wish we had talked more openly about it.
Mm-hmm. We didn't even know it existed.
We didn't. I wish we were able to be in touch. Just people you grew up with. I have so many questions now that I feel like I've grown so much since I last talked to him. He would probably give me an earful about what a mess I was in a lot of ways and how much more.
If he would be honest with you, and I can imagine how you were at that time.
Just
being the ambitious person you were and not being really satisfied with just one person.
Yeah.
I could see that. I'm sure he has a lot to say about that.
He gave me some earfuls.
Here and there.
Here and there.
Yeah.
But I bet there's probably more.
Okay, update on the priapism.
I was about to say we have more. We're going to just continue to update you guys on this because it just,
this
so
is
many
a,
lessons.
This is really good. So ask me some questions on this because I'm not sure what to say.
So the reason we're updating you guys again on this is because he was finally able to get in to see his urologist today. If you're just listening to this for the first time, go back 2 episodes, I think, to listen to what happened when Aiden injected Trimix for the first time, ended up with priapism and in the emergency room, and then how we dealt with that. So the instructions after he was finally treated for it, which took forever, were that he was to follow up with his urologist. He's not supposed to take any ED medications until he gets clearance from his urologist. And we were not supposed to have sex until he got clearance from his urologist today, which we completely ignored. But he has not taken any ED medications. So I'm going to let you take it from here on what the urologist said, or what, what you said to the urologist.
I thought it was time to confess, like, hey, I'm in the lifestyle, because I was telling him about how I had borrowed a friend's Trimix and how I was injecting it. And I was like, and then he was injecting it this way. And I'm like, wait a minute, that's going to give the wrong impression that I was with a guy and we're both injecting Trimix together. So I'm like, so anyway, I'm in the lifestyle. And I was curious to see what his reaction would be. And he was poker faced, but he had a little glint of question and recognition in what I said in that immediate moment. So it's like, just telling someone your lifestyle like that is just, it's always a good experiment, because to see how people react.
Was it interest or was it judgment? Which way did it go?
I think it was like, somewhere in between. It was more like, oh, this is interesting. It's not what every patient tells them when they go in.
It was like, oh, I have a good story today.
So I told him the whole terrible story about what happened to me, and it was in the podcast a couple of episodes ago. But he cleared me. He cleared me on, I was like, look, I want to use that stuff again, but I want to do it right. He said, that's not a problem. And so I think we can, should I share the medical stuff? Does that matter here?
Yes, let's do it. We found out
the dosing and
the correct
what
dosing.
I can do now. And
so be sure if you get a prescription for Trimix, you're getting the correct dosing from your doctor. You're starting usually at a very small dose, and then you're not exceeding certain doses.
And you're not taking Cialis with it, which I was.
No, exactly.
And I knew not to do that, but I did it anyway because Reddit said so.
Although in your case, he says because you take 5 milligrams a day regularly, he said you could continue to do that.
Yeah, he did say if you're consistent with it and you don't amp it up that day,
yeah,
then you can take a regular dose of Cialis.
But the dose he said for the Trimix was much lower.
Yeah,
he said
lower.
Starting with,
and I told him I started with the experimental injection, and then my friend said, here's a full shot. So he's like, so you got extra. I'm like, yeah. And I ramped up my Cialis that day. So that was why I went to the ER. So
The
lesson here is, don't do those things. Get the dosing right. Read the instructions. Definitely
inject in the right spot.
Inject in the right spot, which is something else I didn't do. I didn't have a doctor helping me. I had my buddy who was,
I should not have left you guys on your own.
I had my buddy who was trying to get in your pants, and he just wanted me to move on.
I was trying to give y'all your privacy, but I should have gotten in there with my gloves and dealt.
Yeah, you should have pulled on the healthcare practitioner.
I 100% should have. Yes.
But yeah, so having your buddy say, here you go, and then stick it in the wrong place, and then, you know,
I should have verified the dosing. I should have. There were so many things but that's okay. We're off. And then, okay, so we found out that yes, you can inject with subcutaneous 30 gauge insulin needles, which are much smaller and tinier and more comfortable.
Yes, the ones that my friend brought over were
27 gauge, super thick, very uncomfortable, painful.
Yes, 30 being smaller. And yes. And so I'm like, these needles seem really big. He's like, yeah, that's what I took. And
the pharmacy sent him.
Yeah, the pharmacy
that's
sent
insane.
Him that. But we got the regular little bitty insulin needles, which
we have plenty of those.
I shouldn't feel at all when I do it again. So I'm doing it again.
And then we asked,
Trimix is a bomb.
We're 100%. Yes. 100%, 10 out of 10 would do again. And so you asked because Aiden has noticed some really interesting changes since he's had this bout with priapism.
We got to talk about the changes.
Yes.
You talk about the changes.
Okay. Number one, your BPH urine stream has been perfect. So you haven't even had to take your Cialis because everything has been working perfectly.
Yeah. So I take low dose Cialis, which is 5 milligrams, not much. It's not an ED dose.
No.
It's for BPH, which is a prostate enlargement. And so it helps shrink the prostate, which helps urinary symptoms, which is great because it works for me. Just this low dose, I'm like, oh, I get the benefit of also getting hard when I want, even more hard. And I have the benefit of having a better urinary symptoms. But so that's good, right?
Yeah.
So I take it for that.
So he takes it for that. That's really exciting. And there are tons of guys out. BPH is super, super common.
So I haven't taken it since that night.
No, not at all.
And I've had no urinary symptoms.
No urinary symptoms. Everything is great. So the other thing we have noticed, because of course we had sex every day since,
every day pretty much,
is
more
that
than
Aiden has gained significant girth and some length, but noticeable girth. And you say it's softer. I think it's harder.
Okay, yeah. It doesn't feel the same for me. I mean, it feels great, and we've had successful sex every day since.
We have.
But it doesn't feel exactly the same as it did before, which is interesting.
So is it sensitivity that you're...
A little less sensitivity, maybe. So what's happened is my penis was super hard and being pressured during the priapism incident, and I think it stretched me out a little bit. It makes sense, right? If someone used a penis pump, it makes it more cavernous. This is going about it the opposite way. But my theory is, and it's not medical, it's just my layman's penis holding idea, is that I think it may be bigger.
I'm really afraid to say this, especially because I'm in the medical field, that this is going to make people go out and try to do not go out.
Don't go and do this.
And do too much Trimix and get priapism on purpose to try to get a big dick. Yeah. And we will tell you why, you guys. Jaden was this close to having a necrotic penis. So if you go back and listen, we injected the antidote. The antidote didn't work. He went to the ER. They did more antidote. That didn't work. They had to manually drain the blood from his penis in this penile block procedure. If that hadn't worked.
I asked the urologist this today.
Yes. Right? He said, if that hadn't worked, what was the next step? They said, you had to go to the ER and they would have had to cut out the necrotic tissue. Yes. And at that point, you're looking at a non-functional penis.
Yes. I got dangerously close to that.
Do not mess with this medication.
Yes.
At all. He lucked out.
Even though it gives you a bigger penis.
He's apparently got a bigger penis out of it, and we lucked out. But if you are even close to that four-hour mark and having an erection, get to the emergency room.
Yeah.
Immediately.
It's not that big a deal. You just go to the urgent care, tell them what's going on. If you haven't been able to resolve it with Sudafed, Benadryl, and the antidote, which you definitely want.
Yes.
Which I wasn't able to resolve it with any of those because I think the pressure with all the Cialis I took and the Trimix I took made it irreparable until they did the penile drainage block. Don't go that far. It's not worth it. And no. I was a rare case. Usually the antidote works right away. We weren't injecting it correctly and there was a number of issues and plus the additional Cialis I had taken that day. I was in a perfect storm of possibly losing my penis. Not losing it, but having some tissue scraped out.
Can you imagine?
Would not have been pleasant, no. Nor something I want to live with. Anyway, we wanted to talk about this. It's very embarrassing for me, and it's not easy for me to share this. It's embarrassing because it's, A, I made a mistake. B, I'm talking about my dick all the time, which is not, you know, easy to always.
But I think it's so important. People need to hear this because...
That's why we want to talk
I think
about
it's
it.
So commonly used in the lifestyle that people just think it's just, oh, you know, you read on Reddit, like people are injecting it way more than they're supposed to. Going to hotel takeovers, just shooting it up all the time. Like, be careful. Mm-hmm. This could be life-changing in not a good way.
Yeah. I walked out of that office today going, oh my gosh, I just narrowly avoided a major problem.
Okay. Did he really tell you to crush up the Sudafed next time?
Yeah.
So I
told him I took four Sudafed. He goes, did you crush them up? I'm like, no. What? Am I supposed to snort them or something? What am I supposed to do with that? And he's like, no, you crush it up because it takes a time release away.
I didn't know the tiny red ones aren't time released.
And apparently they are.
Oh. I guess I would speed the onset sure.
That's what you want is a speedier onset because you're working against the clock.
Oh, okay. Good to know. So you've still not taken your Cialis?
I've not taken Cialis and I'm getting hard with you every day and my urinary symptoms have gone away. So maybe that's another side effect is that...
This is wild.
I seem to have gotten better.
I cannot believe this. You are so lucky. We would have made it work with your necrotic penis, baby.
Would you still stay with me?
Of course I would.
Oh, I'm sure you would have.
Because I have the lifestyle.
But you'll be really happy in the lifestyle. I'm going out now.
Repente is so active in the lifestyle.
You can stay home with your necrotic penis, and I'm going to go out and find a regular one.
A regular penis? No, I love on your necrotic penis.
There are solutions for that. There's implants and things like that. No one wants to go to the extreme. But, yeah. Don't repeat.
Do not repeat. So we've got our party coming up this weekend. We're hoping the weather stays so that people can get to us because it's big freeze all across the country everywhere. You've got an awesome DJ set for it.
Yeah, put a set together. It's going to be great.
And
people are going to be dancing. I get to play my music for people who want to hear the music, which is great rather than playing for a corporate gig. I'm really excited about it. I love playing those kinds of gigs, house parties and things like that. That'll be great. And then... I'm going to try not to leave you alone the whole time while I'm DJing.
I'll be fine. You do what you want to do.
I'll be fine.
You know me.
Plenty of men in the room.
This is what I do. If I need time to myself, I tend to disappear and go into your bedroom and just give myself time. Or I'm going to get some water.
I think we'll have lots of great conversations like we have the last few
parties. I think so too.
And they're all friends.
Yes, 100%.
Super excited about that. And then after that, the next lifestyle event is... At El Salvador in May. Yeah.
There's always stuff.
Always something going on.
Yeah, there's birthday parties. There's people meeting up for dinner downtown.
How can people listening find their crew? It's hard to do.
It was. We randomly found our crew because we were just on field and we just kept going to coffee dates with different couples. And we found this one couple that had organized a curated online chat group that they had put together of people that they liked who were just good people, right? Not necessarily the people they had slept with or not, but just people they thought were like, oh, they're cool.
And most decent sized towns are going to have a group like that has their own Telegram chat or Signal chat.
Yeah.
And they're just sharing stuff with each other. And those are always
really
fun. It's fun because everyone's saying whatever they want to say and they're posting naughty things and always innuendo laden conversations. And it's just really fun. And then you get to know them personally that way too. And then they splitter off into other groups. Some people have different interests.
Yeah.
And look around. If you meet enough people, ask them, are there any groups in town and where do they hang out or
house are they parties online? And
so that's one way to get to them. But I think that's been the master stroke for us is finding a group of people that we like and being able to hang out with them. And we just have this amazing social circle now, which is just
it's so helpful to learn from other couples.
Like from zero to this group.
Seriously. And they all have their different stories of how they got into the lifestyle, how they all operate slightly different in it. You know, whether they're dating separately or together, or if they tend to be more sport fuckers, more prolific, or just every once in a while like we are. And it's fascinating to see and learn from. And I just love seeing all the different kinds of relationships there are and just how open you can be.
Yeah, if you're a student of people, it's really fun. Because the stories you get and the things you hear and the way people react, we didn't know it existed 2 years ago. And there's this whole subculture of people who think differently and act differently and do different things. And they have all normal vanilla lives for the most part. And then they have this hobby that is just a blast. And they found their way similar to us, having trial and error and seeing different people and finding out what we like and getting to know ourselves, getting to know each other. It's fun.
Yeah. The other way
you could, a lot of people.
Exactly. Or not. You could
or find, not.
Or do whatever. But the other way you can find people is by traveling, right? There are a lot of podcasters like us. We don't organize events, but there are a lot who do organize events like Naughty Gym, like the El Salvador trip we're going on. They'll do takeovers at places like Hedonism for their week. So if you happen to like their podcast content, go to your favorite podcast and see if they have events. And then you can travel and engage and meet people by going on these trips.
Yeah,
right?
If you're in a town where nobody will accept this, which is very common, you can go out of town and be in a completely different environment and do whatever you want.
Hotel takeovers, lifestyle resorts, there's Desire Pearl, there's Hedonism, there's
Mayan Riviera one.
There's not
cruises, so there's all sorts of places. Mm-hmm. And I would say the hardest part about that is going. Oh my God, what's it going to be like? It is very nerve-wracking to join a lifestyle group event for the first time.
The first one we're doing, you guys, I think it's like 13 couples. This one we're doing in El Salvador.
No, but even just the meet and greet we did the very first time.
That was, like, it was intimidating.
Just going into that, it's just, okay, all these couples are in here and they're all expecting to hook up with someone. And they're all just there to do the same thing, which is meet other people. A lot of them are new. They're just trying it out for the first time. And we always encourage people, just go meet people. You can't go wrong. You just go say hi to people and just start talking to them. No one's going to outright reject you probably, right?
No. You think you go in there and you think everyone else is so experienced and you're the only ones who are nervous.
It's
but literally,
true.
It's just a bunch of nervous, sweet people just like you who also don't know what they're doing and who are insecure about any number of things. And so I think if you go into it really open-minded and just start asking people about themselves and why they came and how they got into the lifestyle and their history.
Yeah, the conversations just take off from there
because
there's so much to talk about. Oh, here's how we started and how did you start? There's a lot of common topics to talk about.
Funny stories, lessons learned.
So I think conversations are just easier. But even if you're in this awkward situation, you can make those conversations happen. I think it's important just to take the step and to just work past your anxiety and your insecurity, whatever it might be. Maybe you don't feel like you're as fit as you should be or as talkative as you should be, but just do it and you'll be surprised at what happens. It can't hurt.
It will open so many conversations within your relationship.
For sure.
Even if you don't do anything with another couple, just pick something, you know, go to a lifestyle club, go to a trip, because you can go to these lifestyle resorts and these trips. You don't have to have sex with anybody else. You could just have a sexy time with your partner where, you know, if it's clothing optional, you could be naked together. You could, you know, even have sex in the playrooms just yourselves. You don't have to do anything with anybody else.
But isn't that spicy, right?
It's super spicy. Yeah. That's still extremely spicy, right? Even if you stay monogamous, which is completely fine. So there's so many ways to go about this if you're looking to spice things up or just start conversations. This is what I love about it. Every little thing that we do, I mean, half the time, I don't know if I really want, I'm like, do I really want to do this? Do I not? But I have this kind of personality where I like to push buttons and push boundaries.
Same.
And then just see how I react. And then I want to talk about it and see, ooh, what did that bring up? What did I learn? Yeah. Oh my gosh. And then what did I learn about you? And what does that mean for us?
And that's very much a growth mindset, right?
Yes.
I want to grow. I want to learn.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Some people, it's hard for them to do that because it's scary. Just do the things. And if you don't want to do the things, don't do them. But I would just encourage to keep spreading your wings and keep pushing envelopes to see where it goes, because that is life. Things change. Your partner changes. Your marriage changes. Everything changes. And you can either adapt to that or you can fight it.
Yeah.
And the fighting it, I haven't been successful at that. Clearly, I've lost to the change. The change is won.
It's more fun. Like, you know what I think about? It makes me open to trying new things because I know that I'm safe to do that with you. I can try new things and I can have whatever opinion I want about them and you want to hear it from me.
Mm-hmm.
And so it just builds on itself. And I think that's the same with you. Like, I want to hear how you react. And I don't have a fear that I can't think of anything that we would try that you would say, I want to do this, that I'm like, oh no, that's going to implode our marriage.
Yeah. No,
I can't really think of anything.
Because we would just talk it through. If it's something we thought would, we wouldn't do it.
Yeah, exactly.
We would talk it out and go, that's dangerous, but I don't know what that would be.
I know. I can't really.
I think 6 months ago, we could have thought of things that we thought it would be.
Maybe, yeah.
We would have thought, oh, if this happened, then I would be really worried, or it's something that I couldn't tolerate. I don't know. We never had that.
Yeah, there are things that I know will make me jealous, but at the same time.
Can't tolerate.
But yeah, but I'm like, no, do it anyway. Let's roll through that. And then I'll be fine. Because that's how I roll. It's true. Because I know I've done this enough times now where I'm like, oh, yeah, that's so temporary. Let's just go. Let's go. Let's move it.
It's LFG. All temporary.
Yeah.
It really is.
It is. And then I process and we talk and then it's, oh, okay. Cool. Okay.
That was a good one.
It was. It was.
I like the book.
I love this book. I know. We'll do more of this. We'll bring it to you. We can have a little mini book club and you guys can write to us and tell us what you think.
Yeah, please do.
Let us know where you fall on the monogamy polyamory spectrum. We're so interested. I bet we change over time depending on where we are.
Yeah, probably will. We have
stages
already.
Stages and phases.
So yeah, send us your emails. Tell us your stories. If you want us to put it on the air, we can. If you ask us a question, we'll answer it.
Yeah.
We'll answer you in your email if you write us. We answered one gentleman who wrote us. We haven't heard back from him yet, but maybe he'll hear this and go check his spam email or something.
Hi.
But yeah, keep those letters coming and we'll see you on the next one.
All right. Bye.
Bye.